It is 7:45 on a Saturday morning. That means it's time once again for a bit of a wine chat from our friends from Haskell's. Ted Farrell is back with us. Ted, good morning to you.
Good morning, Denny. How are you on this fine Saturday?
Oh, I'm feeling great, and I hope you are too. One of my friend, late friend Charlie Boone used to say, people ask him, Charlie, how are you doing? He says, approaching magnificence. I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but
a couple more cups of coffee, we might get there, right?
Absolutely. Well, what can you share with us today, Ted?
Well, today, you know, it's always an exciting day at Haskell's because you never know what a truck brings us when it backs up. And I thought I'd talk a little bit about Australian wines and kind of their impact in the markets, but not only nationally and internationally, but also in the United States. It's kind of a crazy idea that Australia has actually been making wine as a country since about the 1840s. And, you know, they have a little bit difficult climate in some sense because it is a warmer climate across the board. But they've made a lot of wine throughout the years. But the hook was they always kind of made what we call fortified wines. And those wines are when you produce your grapes and go on and make your wine. And then you introduce and you stop the fermentation process by adding an alcohol, usually like a brandy, something of that nature. There's other varietals, but usually it's a brandy that's infused to it. And one reason why they did that was, A, people like to drink it. They liked a little bit more. It's a higher alcohol level. But the bigger hook is they made those wines like that because of the transportation. You know, Australia is almost the size of the United States, and it's a very vast, you know, large country. And to transport those wines from, you know, even the Adelaide up to Sydney, definitely from Perth, you know, it is a far, far way to do it. So fortified wines have a propensity of lasting longer, surviving those long travels, you know, especially a spot from Perth. They would leave Perth and go up, usually the United Kingdom. United Kingdom was one of their largest export markets for their fortified wine for years. And Perth is so remote, believe it or not, it's called the City of Light, similar to Paris. But the reason why I got that connotation was in the early NASA years, they would ask the citizens of Perth to keep their house lights on and the street lights on so NASA could use the city of Perth as a navigation beacon, because you to the east, you have the outback, and to the west, you have the huge Indian Ocean. There isn't much else. They say Perth is one of the most remote metropolitan areas in the world because there just isn't much around it. Ironically, to the south of Perth, they have this area called Margaret's River, one of the best growing regions in all of Australia, and that produces about 80% of Australia's fine wine. The tricky part is in that area, they make great wines, but the hook was it kind of fell disfavored. Now, we had a huge boon with Australian wines. Again, they had some export markets, usually to the UK, sending their fortified wines up. A company called Penfold was one of the first companies to really start making table wine and still wine. And with that, they developed the great varietal Shiraz. Now, Shiraz does very well in those warmer climates. It's a thick-skinned grape. It produces a real robust wine. Little bit of peppery finish, and they sat and they worked on that and they perfected it. They developed a wine called Penfold's Grange Hermitage, and they used the word Hermitage because that is a area in the Rhone Valley in which they use Shiraz or Syrah. So the mix that they used was very similar, but when they started that up in the 50s, they didn't have the labeling laws like they do now, so they could call it Hermitage. And I believe it was in 1989, they actually removed that from the label, and now it is just called Grange. And it's one of Australia's and the world's one of the finest wines, most sought after. Very expensive wine, $300-$400. But I digress and go back to the still wine. So they made a lot of good still wines when they introduced varietals, not only to Syrah, but they also played around with some white wines and things like that. Doing a great job. And then all of a sudden, wineries started cropping up all around. There was the Rosemount Winery that came on, and BRL Hardy's that came on. Now, Hardy's was the same thing. They've been in business since about the 1890s, but again, they started making fortified wines. and doing that. But then it was in the about the mid-90s, say late 80s, that Australian wines all of a sudden were being exported to the United States and really making an impact. They filled in the slot of the Chilean wine. The Chilean wines in the 80s and early 90s were some of the more inexpensive wines that you could have, as far as $8 and under, even $5 and $6 and under. But the Australian wines kind of stepped in that market and really proved to the American palate that they, not only are they making great wine, but it kind of agreed with the American palate. Now, the Shiraz is that full-flavored wine, a little bit of that peppery finish, so it's a bold wine. And Americans kind of like that. They like to look into that glass and find something that they say, hey, this is wonderful. So the Australian wine stepped in and took over that inexpensive slot, because they also, the Chileans have a big fluctuation as far as quality year after year after year. But the Australians stepped in there, and boy, did they pounce on it. You have many, many different labels that came across the ocean. And the unfortunate side of things, over on in Australia, what you started beginning to see is a lot of consolidation, where a large company called Treasury started buying up Penfolds and Rosemount and all this. So it became a huge conglomerate. And really now what they do is export out, mostly to China. But the weirdest was, they kept on growing. They kept on growing. There are the wines, the nice, inexpensive wines that people love. But unlike the movie, let's say, like Sideways, that stopped Merlot consumption and turned people on to Pinot Noir, the Australian wines really didn't have that kind of aha moment or some kind of, you know, influencer saying something bad about them. I think the markets just got oversaturated. You know, they kind of got over-extracted on these big, robust Shiraz that, you know, people couldn't understand, people couldn't get. Then they even, a few of them kind of developed very expensive wines, you know, $70, $80 for kind of the same value. So it was a confusing time. And I think part of it, in my humble opinion, more of it was the consolidation with companies being purchased. You know, a young fellow who had 20 acres was making great wine, got some notoriety, all of a sudden was purchased by the next guy, and then the next one. Then a bigger company bought it in. So it just, their wines became real kind of ambiguous. It just sort of lost in the shuffle, so to speak. And it just fell in disfavor, sir, for some reason. But on the exciting side of things, what we did at Haskell's, and we did this about 20 years ago, was we developed a brand of Australian wines, inexpensive wines, that are just fun and delicious. And they're called Koala Ranch. You know, some people will roll their eyes and go, oh great, a critter wine, you know, named after an animal or whatever. But the Koala Ranch was just a fun little thing. We sat down with the first winemaker about 20 years ago and hashed out the ideas, and literally was drawn out on a cocktail napkin of what our idea of the label was. It was just a label with a little Koala Ranch or koala clinging on the side, and it was quite fun. We rode the wave of those Australian wines coming into the United States. The difficult thing was, this guy got bought up and we kind of lost the brand. It literally went in limbo for a little while. So we needed to rebrand it. So my sister-in-law, who was the CEO of an ad firm in town, a local ad firm, we decided to have a contest with all their designers to redo our label. And those guys, their creative genius, came up with one of the most magnificent labels, in my humble opinion, that I've ever seen. And it's literally two dots and a wine glass, but the wine glass, the way they shape it, looks like the nose of a koala bear. So the two dots and the wine glass look like the face of a koala bear for Koala Ranch. And it was so riveting. I mean, you just looked at it, your jaw dropped. It was so simple, so smart, and just you're breathtaking. And so it revamped the line. The interesting sidebar to that is that ad agency actually won a Chloe, which is an award for the, or sorry, a Clio, which is kind of the Oscars for advertising agency, because it was so creative. I mean, it's just nice little badge of courage for us to put it on there. But in the same note, over at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, they had a display of when wine went modern. And they showed labels from yesteryear of the chateaus and all this type of stuff, and then new ones. And actually, the label of the Koala Ranch was hanging in the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art of showing just how many design and techniques. It was really nice badge of courage. Fun for us that we, this little project that we developed was getting notoriety. Now, the great thing about this whole line is the simple fact that we have about 6 expressions of wines that any wine lover would truly enjoy. We start out, we do have the Cabernet, and that's blended with a little Petit Verdot to give it a round body, but it's a very approachable, easy drinking Cabernet, wonderful little bottle of wine. Of course, you know, we have a little Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc blend, which is kind of on the Bordeaux style, but, you know, we will have spring again. We had fake spring last week, but then we'll have spring again. But that Sauvignon Blanc Semillon will be just one of those porch pounders that people like to have on their, you know, around, open it up, have a little shellfish with it. Just a brilliant, fun wine. But then we get into the two horses of any Australian outfit, and that's the Chardonnay. The Chardonnay is a great expression. Some decent oak to it, but again, not that overpowering kind of fake oak that you sometimes see. Because, you know, nowadays, even when they make bulk Chardonnay like that, they actually dump bags of wood chips in it because that's cheaper than aging it in barrels. They don't do that kind of stuff. It's a soft, subtle oak to it. Again, a very approachable, easy wine, very easy to drink. And, of course, I have to admit, there's a Shiraz, and the Shiraz is just brilliant. Now, Denny, I would recommend you maybe picking up some of that Shiraz to possibly supplement your Malbec needs, because it is a nice fruit-forward wine, a little bit of peppery finish that would go with anything off the grill. Just fantastic. It just was. And the great surprise around this whole line is just recently we received in Moscato and a Rosé. The Rosé, simple, easy. And the Moscato, now it isn't my proper bag of tea. It's a little bit on the sweet side. But, you know, everybody has that relative or that person in their life that likes a little bit of sweet wine, and this Moscato fits that bill perfectly. And actually, if you don't like to consume a real sweet wine, fun thing to do with this was to get some fresh berries, chill them, and pour the Moscato over it for a little dessert. It would just be a clean, great one. But the Koala Ranches are great, and they're a bigger hook. They're a great value. They're $17.99. BOGO. Buy one, get the second one free. $17.99 BOGO for any of those wines. So it's a great way to enhance and increase your cellar, to have some wine around for, you know, with the Shiraz, you're ready for the snow, and for the Sauvignon Blanc, you're ready for the spring.
You've got all the bases covered, and you're right. I forgot about Shiraz for a while. That's a great go-to for a red choice. Thank you for reminding me. And let's remind folks where we can find all these great wines.
You're correct, Eddie. You know, we have all kinds of wines from Australia and all parts of the world as well. And you can find any of them at any of the Haskell's locations throughout the metro area. We have a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking on the weekends. We have a Haskell's in Minnetonka right across from the Ridgedale Shopping Center. Haskell's in St. Paul's Highland Village. Haskell's down in Bloomington at the Lowman's Plaza. We have a Haskell's right in downtown Excelsior. Stop by if you're out by the lake. Or you can go out to Haskell's White Bear Lake if you want to visit that lake, or even Stillwater if you want to see the river. Stop by Haskell's in Plymouth on your way up to the city, or if you want, pull over to Haskell's in Maple Grove. Our super cellar can't be missed. If you're headed down south, pull off of 35 and go to Haskell's Faribault. And if you just want to stay in and you're enjoying the hockey games and all this kind of fun Minnesota spring stuff, you could always go to Haskell's.com 24/7. Place your order, and we will get it into your hands.
We'll do that very thing. Ted, thanks so much. Let's join forces again next week.
I look forward to it, Denny.
Thank you. Ted Farrell from Haskell's.